Friends Podcast.
Hi, I'm Diane Hunt. I'm an impressionist realist painter connecting with nature through my brush. I work in oil paint and watercolor, and I live in the countryside of Maryland's Eastern Shore, not far from the Chesapeake Bay. You can find me online at dianehuntstudio.com. and on Facebook and Instagram at Diane Hunt Studio.
Hi, I'm Constance Brosnan of Steve Brosnan's Jewelry Designs. I live in Oklahoma on a prairie, and I make handmade jewelry in silver, copper, and brass. I'm an artist that paints. I paint pastels and in oil sometimes.
Hello, this is Bob J. Gale. I'm the host of this podcast. I am a emerging representational artist. I do historic renderings, seascapes, landscapes, botanicals, birds, and whatnot, with a tight illustrative hand in watercolor, tin and ink, and acrylic paints. And I live in Oklahoma City. And here we are once again. It is Monday, July the 19th, and you are listening to the Artist Friends Podcast, episode 106. My name is Clyde J. Kale, and I'm being joined by my two artist friends, Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Clyde. Hi, Constance. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Constance. How you doing?
Hi, Clyde. Hi, Diane. Hello, everybody.
Welcome to the podcast. And for our listeners, if you go to www.talkartpodcast.com, talkartpodcast.com, we've only got one video link for this week, and it's about Caravaggio. It's Caravaggio's influence beyond Caravaggio. And it's a little bit different. It was an interview that was being conducted about how scholars and historians, you know, research that, Caravaggio had far more influence on, he had influence of artists of his own period and artists going forward, and that he has really influenced artists in the 20th century because his enemies' bias. They did a really good job of trying to put his work down there, because he was a bit of a bad boy. And for almost 400 years, there wasn't a whole lot of research that was done on Caravaggio, even though his paintings were in churches and private collections and were actually really rather popular. And what caught my attention on this was that the research that's being done now is, when you hear these guys talk, you when you first look at the painting, you don't really see what they're talking about. But then after a while, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, maybe he did influence the cinematographers and some of the other masters. And I wish that, I could get in a time machine and go back and meet and talk to Caravaggio. Of course, he'd probably rob me, because considering his reputation, yeah, he was a scoundrel. Yeah. So yeah, he'd probably, take my money and chase me down the road. Yeah. Get out of here. Quit bugging me. Yeah. But he did have this desire. In fact, it was an interesting book I first came across, and I read, it's called the the sacred and the profane, and about, you know, Caravaggio, even though he had this this reputation as a scoundrel and always getting into trouble and drinking all the time and whatnot, he did have this sacred duty to create his art and everything. Diane, you said you watched a little bit of the video. What did you get out of it? What part of it you watched?
Well, they were talking about how his a lot of his paintings he did self portraits in. He was like the main figure in the art instead of being just a background figure or like in a shadow or, you know, like other artists had done before. They hadn't really put themselves as the main character like he did. So that was something new, I guess, that was come that he brought out. And he did a lot of depictions of common man, like, you know, the people around in his neighborhood and things that were going on, just, you know, normal everyday kind of stuff that most artists at that time weren't really painting. So it gave you a little bit of a peek into their life, I guess, more so than a lot of the other artists had done up to that point. So that was something new too.
Constance, what about you?
Yeah, he did use himself a lot, but he did use a lot of people that were just very easy to, you know, in everyday life to find, like the one that he did of the ricotta eaters. That were pretty cool. But he put himself in there with the ricotta eaters too, you know, so he put himself in a lot of paintings with people that he did paint, you know, but it was big. He always did, like you said, some snarky things, you know, with, he had a very unusual way of painting. He was very hyper realistic painter, and if the fruit that he was painting was going off, he painted it that way. If the leaves that he was using in the painting were had spots on them and stuff, he painted it that way, you know. So I mean, he wasn't afraid to paint things realistically, and if they were off, he painted it that way. So I mean, it's kind of like a nose up at you know, whatever. He wasn't afraid to be himself as a painter and paint things the way he wanted it to, you know. So,
what I think is interesting is when you listen to different critics and historians, you can identify their bias right away. That they were influenced by Caravaggio's enemies, because, like, you know, for 400 it wasn't much, you know, his work wasn't promoted, wasn't much research or talked about his work, because his critics, whom in his time period, whom he brutally made fun of and caused problems for him, they got him back by trying to erase him from history. They couldn't erase his paintings, but they could erase his name as much as possible. And they made up stories about him, and some, they used his paintings as an excuse. One of the stories is that it's never been positively confirmed, but it is possible that he was either homosexual or bisexual. So when you listen to some of the critics today, when they look at his Bacchus paintings, you know, and they said, well, you know, a lot of his paintings have a homoerotic nature to it. See, that's because he was, all they're doing is just resurfacing all of those prejudices and bias from his time period, you know, and it's actually, in a sense, it completely washes over the true value of his work to art history.
Right. Instead of just enjoying the work, you know, for what it is, they've got to try to make something else out of it, you know.
What I like about in this interview, yeah, these two, you could tell these two liked and appreciated Caravaggio when they were talking about,
yeah,
the examples. When they brought up the examples, said there's there is definitely during his time, Rubens was directly influenced by Caravaggio. And they said there's an indirect possibility that even Rembrandt was influenced by Caravaggio, you know. And they talk about how some of his paintings made their way up, still lives, made their way up to Northern Europe, where, you know, the Flemish painters were very, very famous for their detailed, hyper-realistic still lives. And you, when you look at their still lives before Caravaggio's paintings arrived, they were still hyper-realistic, but very light, very fluid, and, you know, not dramatic. But then after, when it was identified, when that painting, several paintings of Caravaggio were purchased by collectors and then displayed up in, and then eventually in the museums in Finland and Norway and all those other places, and Holland, the Dutch painters, they changed. They got to be more dark. They got to be more, had a serious tone to them, which is very much, you know, with the chiaroscuro technique, which Caravaggio is attributed to having developed. Yeah. And to me, I didn't think about that. So it was nice hearing them talk about, you know, about, mm-hmm. you know, and then they brought up, you know, I love film noir from the 40s, you know, the 40s and 50s, you know, which is the technique of very dark and light and the use of the camera, and also the scripts are of a dark nature. And when you hear historians talk about film noir, they talk about it came from Germany, you know, they adopted from Germany. Well, when you go, a lot of Caravaggio's paintings ended up in Germany. And when in the 19th century cinematographers, when the cinema was coming about, you can tell they were directly influenced, because a lot of his paintings have a cinematic effect. They have, you know, they're up front, and some of them very grisly, you know, and with the, you know, shadowy figures in the background, which usually a Caravaggio self-portrait, he's usually standing back there. And, but the, you know, the biblical scenes are very, right up in your face, almost coming off of the canvas, especially the large ones, which is very cinematographic. That's very much the way, you know. So he had an influence all the way up into the, you know, into the 20th century. That's what appealed to me in this conversation. I said, yeah, my buddy, my favorite artist, Caravaggio, because I've been influenced by him dramatically. You know, I tried the copyist technique at times, and, you know, it's and employ a lot of his chiaroscuro techniques, and and of course, you know, we've talked before about his life, you know, which influenced a lot of his stuff. But I've been very blessed. I've had an opportunity to be up close to a Caravaggio painting and didn't even know it. In my 20s, when I was living in Italy and I was in the Navy, I went to visit a church, and here is this. I was just going ooh and ah about how fantastic this painting was, but had no idea that I was standing before a Caravaggio painting. But I was just fascinated. I mean, I remember sitting in a bench for hours and just staring at it, you know.
Some paintings are like that.
So grasping, and just so, you know, grabbed at you, you know, and everything. So, what are you two? So I don't end up talking a lot. You can tell I'm excited about Caravaggio. Diane, what do you got to add to that?
Well, the way he drew his figures and stuff, I can see a lot of that he affected a lot of people, even in, like you said, even in the 20th century, like in the comic book industry, especially. Mm-hmm. his sense of humor and the way he drew his figures and things. I can see a lot of that coming out in the comic books, the way they draw their figures and things.
Very good point. You know, where, you know, the hand reaching out through into the next plane, you know, whatever that, that's
a
like, you know, like when he did the painting of St. Paul and the horse is almost coming right out. Step, you know, he falls off the horse and being stepped on, and it almost comes out of the painting, you know, at you, you know, which is, I'm sure that many of those artists, they probably, you know, studied and, you know, at least saw, you know, Caravaggio, you know, works. And, Constance, talk some more about the snarkiness. That was something I didn't really think about until that guy pointed them out. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the way, they talked about one of the first paintings that they showed was he used leaves and stuff that were already dried. And it was just a pure self-portrait, one of the first ones he did. And one of the fingers was, he showed that a finger was cut off.
Yeah, boy bit.
And there was a whole lot of symbolism in that first painting that they showed. And it was supposed to be a self-portrait. And the fruit was old and all of this stuff was, and it was very, and then the next painting that they showed, I don't know how he could hold that glass there like that for as long as he did. But his cheeks were flush, and he was holding a glass of wine. But he made it so that you could see the ripples in the glass of wine, because he was shaking because he had to hold it for so long, you know, or else he was doing, you know, holding it up and working. And I don't know how he could hold it for that long and paint that painting. But then he showed the vase, the picture that the wine was in, and it looked like it had just been poured, because there were still bubbles in, you know, in the, so they said he
was probably enjoying the wine while he was painting.
Yeah, and that might just be attributed. Yeah, I'm sure he was drinking. There is that. So yeah, when I was younger, I used to do a lot of paintings and drink wine while I was painting, and it does loosen you up and make you a little more adventuresome with the paint.
But a lot of the a lot of historians, you know, they would say the reason why, you know, he's put himself into a lot of the paintings is because, you know, he didn't have enough money, you know, to get models. That could be true, but he put himself in, he was kind of like today, people that take thousand selfies and put them on Instagram all the time. He
could have been a little on the narcissistic side. You know, there is that.
That was looking for narcissistic. Yeah. He was, that was different. None of the other artists were like that. Cause he was
well, you know, Van Gogh didn't have a lot of money either. And he did a lot of self portraits. I mean, sometimes when you're stuck in your room cause the weather's bad, I mean, you just have to do something. I mean, there you are, and there's a mirror, so you might as well paint something. You know, you can paint your hand only so many times, and you got to paint something.
It was interesting with the first painting you were talking about, the, you know, Boy Bitten by Lizard is the title of it. I had heard the other comments that it had a tendency that maybe it was his lover, maybe it was a self-portrait, it was, you know, kind of homoerotic. I'd heard all that. But this guy told us, I had never thought about the true symbolism, you know, of it. And I started looking at it again. I said, hey, he's right. You know, he's got a lizard, you know, on the table. You know, that kind of represents, you know, lizards and snakes and frogs, things that crawl on the forest ground, that they're, you know, from the devil. You know, he said, when we're kicked out of paradise, where, you know, our mortality, you know, and the aging fruit, you know, and everything. He said, this is a guy who, you know, he had been living the high life, but he was, you know, it was, he was facing his mortality, you know, and is facing old age. And then the little thing about the middle finger being bitten, when he said that, he said, this is the snarkiness, because he's giving the finger to the viewers. You know? As it is now, it was very popular then. That was a way, you know, when you say flip somebody off, they did it in Europe. Look at all those.
They even had metaphors back then, you know, or whatever you want to call it.
When you hear that, I said, yeah, okay, that makes sense. You know, that he's, you know, doing, you know, something like that, you know. And and by the way, folks, before we got started here, Constance, Smile Like Constance, asked me, when am I going to do a Bacchus self-portrait? No way. I'm going to fire my hair, and I'm not going to paint with one shoulder uncovered. No.
Well, you like to do Caravaggio-style painting, so I thought maybe you would.
Not that way.
You like some of the other artists that were in the video that we watched, and do a likeness of yourself in the style of the paintings with a grapevine
around my head, you know,
and it held a bunch of grapes. And
of course, then again, if I did one like that and show it to my daughters, they might get on a plane and come over here and rescue me, you know. They might say, Dad has been living alone too long. That might be a motivation, but I didn't know. Nope, I don't think so. Okay, with that, I think we'll wrap up this episode. A little bit shorter than our other episodes, but hey, we can only talk about Caravaggio so much. I think we hit all the high points of the videos. Again, for our listeners, go to www.talkartpodcast.com, talkartpodcast.com, and you'll see the link to the video that we're talking about. It's about an hour long. And it is really, really interesting. It shows, shines the light of Caravaggio's influence throughout time, that he had far more influence on his fellow artists and artists throughout the generations. And that he's lifted and appreciated more than what he has in a time since, like I said, because of his enemies and because of his, you know, personal activities. He was a bit of a scoundrel, you know, like in one video I watched where he was constantly getting in trouble. He was, kept constantly being arrested for what was misdemeanors at the time. One guy ticked him off. 4 o'clock in the morning, he's playing singing and playing a banjo outside of his window, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. And there was a story where he was in a restaurant and he ordered some, artichokes, and the waiter brought him, artichokes cooked in olive oil and artichokes cooked in butter in garlic. And, Caravaggio asked, well, you know, what's this? And the waiter, you know, told him, and he said, well, which one's which? He says, well, you got to figure it out. And he punched the waiter in the face. You know?
Oh, the guy was kind of eccentric, wasn't he?
Yeah. So, yeah. In fact, you know, he was, you know, passed away at an early, you know, he's only 39 years old, and there's It's still a mystery that was, if he was murdered or if he just, you know, died because of exhaustion and drinking too much, you know. But he was constantly in trouble his whole life. But he did paint magnificent paintings that are just breathtaking. So with that, you have been listening to the Artist Friends Podcast, episode 106 for July the 19th. And we've been talking with Diane Hunt, Constance Bronson, and I'm going to say goodbye to Diane.
Good night, Clyde. Good night, everyone. Good night, Constance.
Good night, Clyde. Good night, Diane. Good night, everybody. Thanks for listening. Y'all come back again.
Thanks for listening, folks. And like I always say, if you enjoy these podcasts, please give us some love. Give us however you find us. Give us a positive star rating and thumbs up. and or send us emails with your comments. We really appreciate it. Bye-bye. Until next time.
The Artist Friends Podcast is produced and edited by Clyde J. Kale. Participating artists, Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson, and Clyde J. Kale. You can find more information about Diane Hunt at www.dianehuntstudio.com. Constance Bronson at www.etsy.com/shop/CBROSNANS. Clyde J. Kale at www.cjkaleartworks.com. If you would like to participate or appear as a guest on the Artist Friends Podcast, please email cjkale@mystery-otr.com. If you enjoy these podcasts, please give us a thumbs up or a star rating. And most of all, send us your comments. This podcast is issued under the Creative Commons license.